down a little, please.
All right.
There we go.
My name is Ed Mentor. I'm a recovered addict. I say that with all pride. It took me a long fucking time to get here. I made my first NA meeting in 1949. A lot of people don't know that's where NA started, in Lexington in 49. Danny Carlson started it. He was my friend. Him and I used to make the trips back and forth from New York City into Lexington. I was just a young kid, I was in my teens in that day, and I didn't really want what you had. You didn't have shit. Today you don't have shit. I've been sitting here listening to this bullshit that I've heard for the last 32 fucking years. Someday you're either gonna quit dividing us and make that decision to be divisive and get over that fucking resentment and put this fucking program back together like it should be. Thank God for the people that started this group. I hope it starts a healing process. I also hope this movie that Tommy's been doing for 10 fucking years, he finally got off his ass and made it. I hope that's gonna be putting this program back together. We don't need all this goddamn confusion around here. You've been living this life for 32 fucking years. Get over it. You gotta remember, when we were we, before you were we made bylaws. We made understandings. We made management decisions. We is part of me. We were the roots of this program, see? I'm not a predator, I'm one of the fucking roots. When you cut Jimmy Kay away from this program, you cut the fucking roots of that little plant that used to be so beautiful, growing, every year growing and growing and growing. More people were coming to our program and we were carrying the message and people were getting well and clean. But one day you guys, some of you sitting in this room, I've hated your fucking guts for 35 years, I don't even know you. I just heard of who you are, what asshole you were, and your fucking resentment. But you know what happened? You decided you wanted to take over NA and run it your fucking way. You didn't like it, it was God's way. That's where this program came from. And you wanted to do your own thing and be the tough guy, the biggest man on the block, so you started some resentments. And you killed this program when you cut them fucking roots away from that plant. Okay? And Jimmy Kay was gone. He was the root, the main root. I was one of the fucking roots too. We started this program. I've been around here for 53 fucking years. I'm not a predator. Okay? Anyways, I've been listening to this bullshit all day long. Oh, I thank God for a breath of fresh air. I hope some people understand that, because I don't like what's going on. I feel sorry for these people that have that fucking resentment. Why the hell should you carry that resentment for 30 some odd fucking years and think you have a right to change it? World Service owns that right. Before you were we copyright the things. We, as a member of Narcotics Anonymous, have a right to uphold that copyright law. We don't have a right to print our own fucking shit. That's only dividing us again. I hope the hell this is a part of healing. I may not live to make the next meeting, but I hope they have one next year. If I'm alive, I'll be here. I'm in my fucking 80s, okay? I've been a long road around here. I'm gonna talk about me for a while. I broke every fucking tradition, so I know about breaking traditions. Jimmy Kay was my sponsor. Les Foss brought NA to Walla Walla, Washington. And I became a member of Narcotics Anonymous in 1962. I asked Jimmy to be my sponsor, and he was my sponsor while I was in prison. I got out of prison in 1964. See, I'm a guy that lived most of his life in penitentiaries. Some of you heard last night to know I was on death row for 3 years. I was in Alcatraz for 8.5 fucking years. I know the other side of Narcotics Anonymous. I came out of the fucking gutter. I didn't walk into the rooms, I crawled into the rooms of recovery. You never get me to walk into a fucking room. I mean, you guys didn't have anything I wanted, but I couldn't go back to prison again. See? The last time I beat the Supreme Court, I had triple life, one on top of the other. You know, I was never supposed to get out. The God of my understanding had things he wanted me to do. So when I came to NA in 64, I had a friend by the name of Bill Beck. I can say his last name because he's my friend. He's gone up there, guy calling home. He said, Ed, I want to start a recovery house. And Jimmy said, bullshit, you aren't going to do that. That's in violation of the traditions. Well, see, he loved Bill Beck, he hated me. Bill Beck could get anything he wanted from Jimmy Kay, so I'd say, Bill, go nudge the old man. He was a prick. Anyone know Jimmy Kay? I love the man, he saved my life. He saved everyone else's life in this fucking room. But he's a prick. Could be. I've seen the guy with a black eye and crutched down the face. I said, what happened, Jimmy? Oh, that goddamn guy down the auto parts store didn't argue me about a part. I had to straighten him out. I remember one day his daughter, Kathy, got a car, kind of a new car for her, and some alcoholic come around the corner and run into a fucking car, and Jimmy runs out there. She's saying, Daddy, call the cops. No, he said, give me the fucking big book. The guy's drunk. He ain't calling the cops. Give me the big book. We'll carry the message. That's the kind of guy he was. Yeah. Never did call the cops. Poor Kathy never got a fucking car back either. Resentment. She's still got a resentment after all these years. You know? God, what a way of living. Resentment will kill you. I don't have any. I'm so fucking crazy, I don't have any of them things. I don't let them things bother me. Okay, how am I going to tell this story? Oh, tomorrow. Yesterday you saw I had a big club. I have to tell you about this stick. I went home last night. Let me pull this little shit a little bit closer. Follow my ass here. I had this big stick last night. And I wanted to bring it to me today, and I said, no, if I prick that stick and they stop that shit, I'll probably wrap one of them upside the fucking head. So I'm going to prick. I had some fray, and I brought my walker today and left the big stick home. This big story about this big stick, I spoke up the Gene's death anniversary, and this old ex-convict just got out of the penitentiary, biker, and he says, I want you to go to my house. I got a present for you. So I wanted to give you my club. Now, you can remember a fucking dope fiend got a club, was an ex-biker. I'm doing, you either got a 2x4 or a metal bar or a fucking baseball bat, right? So here I'm riding this guy and he says, I have to tell you, I don't know how to drive. I only know how to ride bikes. But he's got his girlfriend's car and he's stirring it back and forth like this. I'm going way up the fucking mountain with him. I'm really getting a little scared, I don't know. You got a little old cabin way up the fucking mountain. He says, wait here in the car, let me go get my club. I said, oh, what did I get myself into? So he came out with this little walking stick. That's why I carried that stick with me all the time. Anyways, we started the first recovery house here in San Jose called Chrysalis. Some of you will stay there, you know, and about it. And I wasn't up here, I was down in Southern California, but there was a guy who was a contractor, built 5 houses, he couldn't sell them. They were gonna foreclose on him. The bonding company was gonna foreclose on him, and he needed 10,000 bucks. So I loaned him the 10,000 bucks, and Beth and Bill and the other people started the recovery house up there. And I used to come up here every week or so with a bunch of dope fiends, like, you, some of you guys know him. I've heard his name mentioned up here, but I'm not going to tell you his name. But anyways, he cleaned till he committed suicide about 3 or 4 months ago, one of them. But anyways, they were doing great things for a while. And then a year later, I brought Bill back down to San Fernando when we started the Reprieve House. That was the second house. And after we bought, the Reprieve House fell down in 1971. Before it fell down, Bill Beck, and I took a girl in. My background is my family are made people in the syndicate. So they asked me not to do anything that would disgrace them, and I promised to do that, and they let me have a loose mouth and go carry this message. But anyways, a person from the syndicate sent his daughter to my house. And he called me up and he says, I want to speak to my daughter, Leslie. I don't know how many remember Bill Beck had a wife named Leslie. I said, she's not here. Bill borrowed my car. I said, she's out with Bill doing their thing. Well, he called me up at 9 o'clock at night. He said, I want to talk to my daughter. I said, she hasn't got back yet. He said, when I call at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, she's not there. There's a contract out on you and Bill. So Bill calls me about 7 in the morning. He says, where the fuck are you at? So I'm over here off of 101 freeway at a little hourly rental motel, and I need to get back there. And I said, well, what's preventing you? He says, I got some drugs. I said, really? Got some pot. I don't know if you knew Bill Beck. He used to smoke 30 joints a day. Okay, what are we going to do about it? He says, why don't you come over and get it? So I went over to pick him up in another guy's car, because he had my car. He had a bail. He'd only been out on the streets 2 days, but he had a fucking bail. What the hell do you think I'm going to do with this, Bill? The cops are driving up the street. This is a fucking whorehouse, this whole roll. He says, I don't know. Call Charlie Manson. So I called Charlie, and Charlie come up and took the bundle out to the ranch. And I told Bill, you better pack it back and go open Impact. That's where Impact came from. And I started a program, detox program. I'm the first licensed methadone detox in the state of California. And I got a license to do that. And because we had a need to do something with addicts. In the old days, if you were a drug addict and you called, the only way you got to us was to call World Service, which was Gene Hague's wife. Tilly was our answering machine. And Tilly would call someone like me, which is only 10 or 11 of us, and we'd go out and make a 12-step call on you. If you were by yourself and you had no place to go, we'd take you back to our house and put you on our couch. The problem is by the time we got up in the morning and went to work and you were sick, usually by the time we got home, there was nothing left in your fucking house, okay? And the guy was out there doing what he had to do. I never lost anything. And people say, how come, Ed, no one steals from you? Well, I put a $20 bill on my counter. I said, asshole, I know about being sick. If you need to go get off, take these 20 and pay me back when you can, but don't touch my fucking stuff. I never lost anything. These guys are talking about getting ripped off and getting ripped off. But anyways, that's why we started recovery houses, because there was no place to go. No recovery houses in California except Synanon in them days. Anyways, in 71, we had a problem with detox. There was no detox facilities in California. Do you know in Los Angeles, Orange County, we had 10 beds, that's it. 4 in all of you, and 6 at Metropolitan State Hospital. We had drug addicts coming out of our ass. You know, we didn't know what to do for them. We used to take them, and they'd kick them, and they'd give them pills and try to detox them and shit. It was an old story, like when we used to go to Lexington. By the time we got off of pills and we went home, we used to always take the bus from Lexington through Nashville to get to New York City, because they sold drugs over the counter in Nashville. I never got back to New York clean. That's the way it was in them days. Dopamine is dope. Anyways, I get this license to do detox. And when I put this whole project together, and I got medical doctors and social workers and everything else, he says, well, you have a problem. You need a PhD psychologist to run your program. And I said, that's me. The story gets weird. I have a fourth grade education, but I read in the back of the Police Gazette you could buy a diploma for $15. And I bought me, it said PhD, Ed Mentor. And I hung it up my wall and they gave me a license. I was so fucking proud I bought me an MSW to go with it. And I, you know, the funny part of it, I had them dated the same date. I didn't know you had to go to school 4 years in between. But anyway, the state of California thought I was a doctor and I was billed Medicare, Medi-Cal. Wonder they didn't put me in the fuck under the penitentiary again, you know. In fact, that one guy I remember, I detoxed four times. Once was himself, once was his mother, once was his sister, and once was his brother. So he was all kinds of, but it was the same guy. He's got 37 years clean now. But we could care less as long as they had a fucking Medi-Cal card. Phew. But anyways, during the Charlie Manson trial, by that time, I'm the president of Narcotics Anonymous because I was chair head of the board of trustees. Okay, and I got letters saying, Mr. President of Narcotics Anonymous. I still have that in the archives. One of the old trustees sitting right over there, and my friend from many, many years. We were trustees together. He put up with my shit. In fact, he put on the first world conference of Narcotics Anonymous. But anyways, I believed all that bullshit. And during Charlie Manson's trial, I was on KTLA every day because we had written a book, Bob Stone, who became our director, and I were involved together with a program called IDOT. Dorothy Gildersleeve was one of our trustees. And we wrote a book called Darkness on Your Doorstep. And I actually predicted in the 1960s what NA was to become in the 80s. And that was we were getting all you assholes that dropped acid, inners and the outers and the uppers and the downers. Didn't even know what the fuck you were taking out. You know, burning your brains out at 18 and become a fucking vegetable. I predicted that. That's what would end up becoming NA. And sure enough, that's what it's become. We have more drug abusers today than we have the old addict. When I came here, you were not a heroin addict. We didn't consider you an addict. I remember the first person came to NA that was just using pills with a little girl dropping 60 reds a day. I put her on a blanket in the corner and said, we're going to be with you, girl, until you clean up. And the fucking doctor said, you better get her up to the emergency room. I'm going to kill her. I didn't know the fucking difference. I never done reds. Anyways, during the Manson trial, like I say, I was on TV every day, and President Nixon was out here. And he was listening to me. He went back to Washington, and he says, I want you to go to California and hire that doctor. He knows more about drugs than anyone I've ever met. And believe it or not, I became the assistant director of National Institute of Drug Abuse for many years. And I had them two diplomas hanging on the wall. And Dr. Bennett said, I was too embarrassed to ask you how come you got them the same date. You just must be a smart bastard to take both degrees at the same time. And I run that. My job was evaluation and statistics, and I was able to carry the message of recovery by sponsoring these recovery programs. One of them was the Phoenix House in New York. Now they're all over. And I'm Jewish. I used to be. I guess I still am. But anyways, I was sitting in a chapel. I was speaking up in Yosemite National Park at the Bawana Lodge. I was speaking about drugs and recovery and to the people in probation and in different mental health programs. And I walked across the street, and there was a little chapel there. And I didn't tell you this, but I will. I went into this little chapel, and I was sitting there, and I looked back behind me, and there was this rabbi from the Phoenix House. And he come up to me and he says, Ed, what's wrong with you? Nothing, I'm clean. That was all my answer to everything. I'm all right, I'm clean. He didn't know how fucking sick I was. No one knew that I was 23 years on the program and never worked but the first step. See, I liked number 1 and 12, that shit in between had nothing to do with Ed Mentor. I didn't want none of that. I just wanted to help the addict, carry the message, and clean up the fucking world. And I did it my way. It wasn't always the right way, but I done it. See, I'm a firm believer. You want something done, do it. Don't offend me or my program or my way of living or this program that's kept me alive for all these years. I sat here today and my heart cried before. But eventually, Tommy, after 10 fucking years, got this movie together. I don't know how many people saw parts of that movie today. Good God, 10 minutes? I can read still. Oh God, how the hell am I going to get away with 10 minutes? Anyways, I went back to Washington, and then in 1985, I'm so sick. How sick am I? At 8 years, I had a frontal lobotomy because I was judged to be criminally insane, childhood schizophrenic, a ward of the state, and a fucking guinea pig. And the doctors operated, and that's what these scars are, where they opened up my head and tried to separate the brains. Didn't have too many, but they tried to separate them because I was an angry, angry, angry soul. And I carried that anger all the way through my life where I ended up being a killer, a professional killer. And I ended up killing 3 cops and going to the electric chair and feeding it, got a reprieve. Then going to Alcatraz with triple life. And I beat it in Supreme Court and I walked out. The fucking state of Texas couldn't retry me because they'd already given me a reprieve. God was involved. He had things for me to do. He still got things for me to do. And I tell him all the time, don't fuck with me today, brother. I got things to do. Someday I'm going to get up and I'm going to be ready to go home. See, because all my friends are there now. I'm the only one left. Shit, that's a bummer. But anyways, I hope you count these fucking minutes, okay? Because I don't know what 10 minutes means. Okay, so anyways, in 85, I finally accepted God as my personal savior. I didn't know who the hell he was. This rabbi said, Ed, what's wrong with you? And I says, I'm looking for God. Don't forget what my answer was. It was his answer. He said, he's not lost, you are. He's not lost, you are. So if you don't know who this God of understanding, you'll never be recovered. If you don't work these 12 steps in their entirety and their continuity, you'll never find recovery. And to the day you can live this fucking program and not work it, it becomes a part of your life, you can say, I'm no longer in abstinence. I'm a recovered dope fiend. Then you're free for the rest of your fucking life. You never have to go out and use again unless you choose to. That's your choice. I've buried so fucking many one out. You can't even count the people I've buried. I don't sponsor anyone and never did because Jimmy said, how are you going to tell the guy to work the fucking steps? It took you 23 years to do it. Okay? It took me 5 years after I finally decided I need a God in my life. I become a Catholic, a Mormon, a Jehovah's Witness, a Salvation Armyist, and anyone else that I would try to get help from. Finally, the rabbi says, why don't you go out and sit under a teacher, not a preacher? And I found a teacher. His name was Jack Haefeli, Southern Baptist. Hallelujah. I had no idea what the fuck he was talking about. But he would sit there for hours and play the piano and talk about me, about my Savior, my God, of my understanding that I had no idea who he was. How can you turn your will and your life over to God if you don't know who he is? And I finally chose him. I'm not only program-centered, I'm Christ-centered. That offends you, tough shit. That's my life, that's what I stand for, that's what I was taught when I walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and that's what will keep me clean the day I die. See, I don't have a relapse in me because I don't want to use anymore. What a miracle. God has miracles in this room. There's lots of fucking changes. You don't have to go the route I went. There's a lot easier way, a softer, easier way. Just make up your fucking mind to work the steps. Follow the word. Become equally yoked. Find you a decent lady to share your life with. Don't use her. I've been married 6 times clean. Took me a long time before I was learned how to love. Thank God I never married another girl in the program. I fucked enough girls' lives up. I never dated anyone on the program because I didn't want 2 sickies in the same room. So I never used anyone, thank God. But anyways, that's my story. I could go on for hours. ask a dope fiend to talk for a half hour. Good God. Anyways, that's my story. Let's hope that this day will start the mending and start the divisiveness and start the healing. We can no longer carry that in our lives. It only leads to more. Remember that beautiful bush we had when any was growing before you cut the fucking roots off and left it suspended in the air? Let's put some fucking roots back underneath this program. Don't let it float out there with all these fucking years of resentments and all that. Get together and make a decision of who the fuck we really are and what we stand for. And look at it from the way we done it before, you become part of we. See? I don't like the idea of all these changes. I didn't like what they done to Jimmy King, and I'll always have a resentment for that. But I'm glad they did, because then they wouldn't have grown if Jimmy hadn't got out of this. Jimmy was my friend, and he saved my life, but he's also the biggest asshole I ever know. And he thought he run NA, just like some of you in this room that I don't like think you run NA. There's no people running this program. This is God's way for the addict to find sobriety, or cleanliness, or what the hell you want to call it. We are sick people. We do not have a fucking disease. We have mental health problems. We're all fucking nuts. I asked Bill Wilson when he wrote the big book and some of the things, I said, Bill, why did you say we had a disease? He said, because every time I would talk about our mental health problems, people would say, yeah, we're not crazy. Why the fuck do you do that shit? You know? Why do you have to hide reality behind a substance so you can survive another fucking day? Don't tell me you partied. Bullshit. You tried to find reality with the drugs you were using. And when you cleaned up the next day, fucking reality was it was still there. Your sickness, your disease was still there. So let's call it what it is. We have a disease, a mental health issue. And we can come here and learn how to live without having to go through that issue every day. Thank you.